All right, we are live. Excellent. Well, the council is just returning from a closed session. I will ask our city attorney if there is any reportable action.
There is no reportable action from the closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Pirick. Well, I will call to order the regular session for the City Council of the City of Atascadero. And I will ask Mayor Pro Tem Funk to lead us in a pledge to the flag.
Please rise and join me as able.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo.
Here.
Councilmember Darris.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Here.
Mayor Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Well, for those of you attending in person, welcome. If you are listening on any of the multiple channels that we have available, we welcome you this evening. If you would like to speak by phone for community forum or any public comment on any item appearing on this agenda, you can do so by calling into Zoom. And that phone number is 669-900-6833. Again, that's 669-900-6833. And when you call in, you will use meeting ID 889-2347-9018. Again, 889-2347-9018. If you go to atascadero.org and you download or just pull up this evening's agenda, it will be right there on the front page as well. When you call, do let us know which item you'd like to speak on. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll so move.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to our consent calendar. The consent calendar contains items that are considered to be routine and non-controversial by staff and can be approved in one motion. If there is a member of the public or a member of council wishing to pull an item for further discussion, we will do that and have a separate vote. So I will look to my colleagues, anyone wishing to pull an item. I'm not seeing anyone. If there's anyone in the webinar who wants to comment or pull in a consent item, you can raise your hand using that raise hand icon at the bottom of the screen. Anyone here in chambers? Seeing none, I'll ask for a motion.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Councilmember Darris. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And now we are on to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The first item I want to talk about tonight is the Lake Fest and Children's Day in the Park that occurred last Saturday. So crowds flocked to Atascadero Lake Park for the 6th annual Lake Fest with Children's Day in the Park on Saturday, May 20th. Beautiful weather, a full Atascadero Lake, vendors, food, and live music rounded out the day. There was a fishing derby in the morning with the famous cardboard boat race. I heard there was a very persistent Captain Borbo that almost went down with his ship, but was able to bring his ship back to shore through an epic journey there. It was just a lot of fun. I was unable to make it, but luckily I've been seeing some videos of it. I love the cardboard boat race. If you haven't been, mark it on your calendars for next year. It's well worth it. A lot of fun, a lot of hard work goes into those boats, and a lot of fun is had by everybody that participates, so that's fantastic. I also want to tell you tonight about the wildfire consultation program, also remind people that June 1st is weed abatement, so Atascadero Fire and Emergency Services would like to make sure you have defensible space around your home. And with the help of grant funding from San Luis Obispo Fire Safe Council, The Atascadero Fire Department can consult with homeowners residing in Atascadero west of Highway 101. So if you live west of 101, you are eligible for a free wildfire risk consultation. And as part of the risk consultation, our fire staff will meet you at your residence, evaluate your property and structures, provide information to help firefighters defend your home, and answer any questions you may have. This is a very popular service that we have. Last year it was limited just to those in the very high fire severity zone. This year they are expanding that thanks to Fire Safe Council. It is well worth it from everybody that I talked to that got it last year. Please feel free. So to request a wildfire risk consultation visit, you can go to www.atascadero.org/fireconsultation or call 805-470-3300. And while we're talking the fire department wants to remind you that clearing weeds by June 1st is mandatory. We've got a lot of rain. I know a lot of us cut our weeds early, even in May, with the wet weather even today. I know a lot of those weeds are growing back. Give them a quick trim. They have to be kept short. We're going to go back out, inspect every property on June 1st. You don't want the city to abate your weeds. It is very, very expensive. We don't want to do it. Please don't make us do it. Please cut your weeds by June 1st. And then please, as a courtesy to everybody, keep those cut all summer long. With the rain meant a lot of vegetation and potentially more fire risks. So June 1st, cut your weeds by June 1st. I want to talk about an upcoming event. It is the Memorial Day ceremony at the Faces of Freedom. The Atascadero Veterans Memorial Foundation will be holding their 2023 Memorial Day ceremony at the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial on Moro Road at the Atascadero Lake Park. The ceremony will be on Monday, May 29th at 11 a.m. and will last just over an hour. We will not have a barbecue this year following the ceremony, but the members of the foundation look forward to seeing everyone there on Memorial Day to honor those who paid the ultimate sacrifice. It is always an amazing ceremony, well worth attending. It is open to all. Anyone is allowed to attend. Just come out. It's going to be Monday at 11 a.m. And then on June 2nd, we have another First Fridays event. We are going to have a pub crawl. So starting at 5:30 p.m. in the downtown on June 2nd, you can pick up your pub crawl card from any of the following locations: Ancient Owl Beer and Bottle Shop, Barley and Boar, Carbon 6 Wine Bar, Central Coast Distillery, Cielo Restaurante, Colony Market and Deli, Kula Vineyards and Winery, The Poisoned Apple, Rock on Tour Room, Ruby Cellar, Streetside Ale House, Tent City Brewing, Unhinged Beer and Wine Bar, Whiskey in June, and Wild Fields Brew House. All you need is 3 stamps. You don't have to go to all of those places. Go to 1, get your card, get 3 stamps. And you do not need to purchase anything to participate. So drop off your card at the last location, and it will be entered to win a variety of great gift cards. And also be sure to pick up your hashtag A-Town Downtown passport to win a shopping spree at any of the 35 participating locations and enjoy collecting stamps on that card while shopping downtown. Collect 6 stamps to complete your passport and return it to any participating business to be entered in the drawing to win a downtown shopping spree. Make sure you submit your cards at the last place you get the stamp. And winners for both cards will be announced on June 9th. And then it's a little ways off, not until June 24th, but the Atascadero Lakeside Wine Festival is coming up. It will be here on Saturday, June 24th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Lake Park. Come enjoy over 50 wineries, breweries, and cideries, plus great food, music, art demonstrations, and zoo entrance with your ticket. Bring a low-back chair and enjoy the afternoon by the lake, and a portion of the proceeds will help benefit the Charles Paddock Zoo. So get your tickets now. They're available at the Chamber website, and if you go to visitatascadero.com/events, As always, we have links and all the information on the great events that are occurring here in town. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Just one question with regarding to the weed abatement. If some of our folks are having trouble finding someone to help them with that weed abatement, does the fire department have any recommendations of folks who might do that work?
I don't believe we have recommendations, but I know that we used to have a list. I'm looking to Matt. We do have a list of a lot of people that call and say, hey, I'm willing to do weed abatement. So.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. Moving on to community forum, this portion of the meeting is reserved for persons who are wishing to address the council this evening on an item that is not on this evening's agenda, but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and a total of up to 30 minutes will be set aside for community forum. When you come to the lectern or raise your hand here on the Zoom webinar or press star 9 on the phone, when you do come on, please state your name for the record, and we will have the timer going so that you'll be able to gauge yourself and make sure you get in everything that you want to. So with that, I will welcome first speakers to the lectern. Yes, come on up.
Good evening. My name is Twyla Martin. I reside at 10955 Colorado Road. I'm here this evening to express my grievances against the city for the excessive flooding on my property caused by the raised elevation on San Diego Road. I have sent numerous emails, photos, a video, and attended 2 meetings asking the city to restore my property to its pre-renovated flood level. But nothing is being done, and it's far too destructive for me to ignore. It has to be dealt with one way or another, and I welcome any assistance and advice. My 2-acre property fronts Colorado Road and is bordered on one side by San Diego Road. There's a culvert on the other side of the road. The culvert, San Diego Road, and a strip of my property bordering the road are all in FEMA's Zone A flood hazard area. The culvert has a history of flooding over the top of San Diego Road at the front corner of my property. It then flows downhill along the road to the back of my property. There's a drain pipe that runs under the road that's supposed to drain my property. Unfortunately, when the water level in the culvert rises over the top of the drain pipe, the water flows onto my property. In other words, the outlet becomes an inlet. When the water covers the drain pipe on my side too, then it stops flowing in either direction. The water stops coming in through the drain pipe, but it continues to flow down the side of my property and to the back of it. When the water level reaches the top of San Diego Road, it flows over it, and that's what drains my property. Unfortunately, when the city demolished, redesigned, and reconstructed San Diego Road, the elevation was raised several inches, forming a dam and preventing my property from draining like it did. I spent years planning and designing my property with the original flood level in mind. My corral, sheds, fences, storage areas, fruit trees were all added so they wouldn't flood. Then improvements were made to San Diego Road. Unfortunately, even though the road is in a Zone A hazard area, the city failed to conduct any studies as required by FEMA to demonstrate that the raised elevation wouldn't result in any increase in flood levels, which it clearly did. On January 4th, January 14th, and March 10th, and of course January 9th, the increase in the flood level was enormous. And yes, the January 9th flooding was historical, but the other 3 times were not. I had extreme flooding that I have never experienced in 20 years. A pasture that has never flooded was underwater. My outbuilding that stores my lawnmower, cultivator, etc., were knee-deep in water. The dock over my seasonal pond disappeared. My friends' fences and fruit trees were sitting in several inches of water. The impact after each of those rain events was devastating, and the mud and debris left behind when the water receded was overwhelming. All of this damage caused because the city elevated the road.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Next speaker, Come on forward. If you are on Zoom, go ahead and raise your hand. We have someone in chambers, but raise your hand and you will be next up.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin, resident business owner of our wonderful city here. A few things today. Let's start off with a couple positives that our city is doing. We have the Joy Playground. I've been taking my daughter there weekly, and I can tell you that it is absolutely spotless and kept up, and we do appreciate that. Thank you very much. And seems to be in pretty good shape at the same time. Some good things happening in our city that we've discovered, and I know it was brought up here once or twice before, but there's an ice cream shop in the old Kmart shopping center next to Dan's Grub Shop. If anybody's listening, their prices are reasonable. They make everything in-house, and it's well worth the visit to that ice cream parlor. Or it's more than that, but it's definitely incredible. On another note, we're trying to attract some TOT business and tourism in our town and having a lot of special events. And that's a great thing for our city, and it's great for the hotels and TOT. However, when you get off the highway at 101 in Del Rio, and if a council or city would like to see the videos, that road is in deplorable shape. I know it's scheduled to be redone in 2 years, but we've got to do some hot patching sooner than later. The holes in there, you could plant an oak tree in it, and it would sustain. I'm not kidding any longer. It is horrible. So we need to address that sooner than later. It's not just the residents complaining, but that's the first impression that people coming from the north going south are going to get. It's not very good for our city. With that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Next speaker, anyone else who, I'm seeing several folks in the webinar, if there's anyone who wants to raise your hand, please do so now. Simply press that at the bottom of your screen, the raise hand icon. And Luke, I'm not seeing anyone on the phone, is that correct? All right, so I'm about to close community forum unless somebody raises their hand. All right, community forum is now closed. And, you know, as you know, subjects brought up during community forum do not become a discussion here at council this evening. So I will just ask staff to contact the individual who spoke about her property. And, you know, you can let Mr. Oslin know what we're doing at Del Rio Road with that patching, because I think we all experience that. I know there's a lot of places where we're having challenges with getting it to stick. And so we're working on it. We're going to move on to our first public hearing, or our only public hearing, the Proposition 218 Majority Protest Process relative to proposed increase in wastewater sewer rates. And I will first ask if we have any ex parte.
No. None.
Actually, we should say this is our first public hearing. We have two. And I have none as well. So no ex parte. We will move this over to Ryan Betts with Public Works.
Thank you, Mayor. City Council, my name is Ryan Betts, Public Works Analyst, and I'll wait for the slide deck to get on. There it is. Okay. We're here before tonight as part of the Proposition 218 majority protest process relative to the proposed increase to the wastewater, i.e. sewer rates. Just by way of background, staff presented an item on March 28th, 2023 that the Council approved. And that kind of set in motion this Prop 218 process. At that meeting, we kind of briefly highlighted the wastewater rate study that was completed back in 2019. Prior to 2019, I believe sewer infrastructure, sewer rates, any of that nature, really wasn't approved or increased for a number of years. And so the city made the very important investment to take a holistic view, a deep dive into what it takes cost-wise to run a wastewater division for the residents and businesses in the community. They looked at both collection and treatment, existing infrastructure costs, operation costs, and also looked into the future at ultimately replacing lift stations, for examples, and ultimately our wastewater treatment plant and secondary treatment plant, which is going to be happening sooner before we know it. At that meeting in March, Council set a date for a public hearing for today and directed staff to send notices for the public hearing to all property owners. Staff did that. We per Prop 218, there's a 45-day review period. We sent those notices out in early April for giving chance of folks to come and provide a written protest should they want to protest the proposed rate increase. The number of property owners is around 5,474 property owners. The proposed rate increases to you before you tonight goes from about $40.46 per EDU, and EDU stands for Equivalent Dwelling Unit. That is the kind of term we assigned a basic household. So one household equals one equivalent dwelling unit, or one. A condo, for example, has less kind of impact on the overall wastewater division or operation. So that's assigned a 0.75. And then you only go up from there. For example, restaurants with less than 40 seats capacity is around four EDUs, gyms, stores, restaurants, and whatnot. So before you tonight, one of the increases is to go from EDUs from 40.46 to 48.15. That's about a 19% increase. That follows consistently with previous rate increases. As I mentioned before, that wastewater rate study completed in 2019 kind of set a five-year max or 5 years to kind of take a look at proposed rate increases. This is the fifth year, if you will, of that rate study. Staff has proposed for council's consideration as part of the budget adoption to do another study to look a little bit deeper into those wastewater operations and infrastructure costs and provide a new study that council could consider at a later date. So that's to come should the council approve it. The slide in front of you is a breakdown of those EDUs. As you can see, we go from residential to non-residential, and then we have a series of categories broken out depending on the industry standard of impact to both the collection and treatment process. This same graphic was included in the notification to all property owners 45 days ahead of this meeting. A lot of folks always ask, how are we doing compared to our lovely neighbors? So we provided this graph right here. As you can see, that light bluer line is our current rates compared to our neighboring cities and CSDs. And then the purple is what's being proposed tonight. Keep in mind for council's consideration that this was done late February, early March, and many cities in the area and CSDs were considering at that time to again increase their own wastewater slash sewer rates as well, and many of them have been successful. So I would imagine that that purple line is a lot closer to the blue line come July 1. And with that, we have several recommendations for council to consider tonight. I will probably turn it over to our deputy city manager, city clerk, to kind of walk us through the Prop 218 process, and then we'll maybe we should ask questions now or go through the process. I'll leave it up to Mrs. Christensen.
Thanks. So now what we're going to do is go through the Prop 218 process, which is where you can open it for a public hearing to hear any protest. Then we go to the tabulation, and then from there to a vote from the city council. Depending on the tabulation, on whether or not there's a majority protest, and then through the two resolutions.
Thank you. And as Mr. Betts said, it had been a while since we'd increased rates. A while is a quarter of a century. That's how long that we did decrease rates since we had kind of kept up with the cost of delivering the service. And we had gotten that 5 year rather than jumping everybody up in 1 year, we spread it out over 5 years. So many of you have been with us along the way, and you understand this process and what we've been going through. I will ask council members if there are any questions. Council Member Borbo.
Yeah, Ryan, in the rate notice, it makes mention of the capital improvements, including the major improvement to the water treatment facility. But you mentioned the subsequent study that will be done. So this rate increase, that we've been doing, as the mayor mentioned, for 5 years, we've been increasing the rates because we hadn't done it for 25 years. Are we accumulating some of the money needed for that thing, and the rate study just, or the subsequent rate study is going to try to refine that, or is it designed to collect the additional necessary revenue to support the, you know, the totally revamped plant?
Great question. I think it does. It'll do both. What we've done over the last 4 years, if you will, is strategically accumulate enough rate increases to help pay now and for future cost increases to a certain extent with what we knew 4 years ago as part of that rate study. We now know additional information in terms of cost increases, construction cost increases, for example, new regulatory requirements, both from the state and the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, as part of our general permit that will be required to be under the new treatment plant when we do that retrofit. So things have changed, somewhat expected. This new rate study will look at all those parameters, again, look into the future, and then really come back to council to have you folks kind of understand that and then give us direction on how we want to go forward to ensure that we steadily, strategically apply, if any, new rates for wastewater.
Right. Thank you. And the second question, I didn't see it in here in the staff report or in the chart, but what is this percentage increase? And I'm assuming for all of the different categories, it's the same percentage increase across the board. None of them changed other than by the same percentage, right?
Correct. It's around 19%.
Okay. Thank you.
Quick question. The unlisted uses, it says they're determined by use of a fixture units from the California Plumbing Code or as by means deemed appropriate by the city manager. That's on page 70. So for unlisted units, we say it's one unit. Could it end up being more or less depending on what an unlisted use is? It's the one on the very bottom.
Yes. This category isn't exhaustive, this list, if you will, and there are uses that come up time to time that may not fit neatly and exactly with this. So council at that time provided the allowance to the, and I think it's the city engineer, if I'm correct, not the...
Oh, sorry. Yes, it
city
is
engineer.
City and capital,
that's okay.
And then I just manager right after
that's
you.
Okay.
City engineer.
On a case-by-case basis, because we're seeing some creative uses for businesses that may blend some of these, and so we do site visits sometimes. We come out, we look at what they are proposing to do through the development review process and really make sure that it fits as clean as possible within one of the categories, and then the city engineer can make that determination.
And then we'll make the determination on if it fits into a category or maybe it's its own, but we come up with what the EDU should be for that
Correct.
Use as best we can.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any other? Sure.
Yeah, just can you confirm that the reason that we have rates that are specific to the type of usage and everybody gets the same rate in that usage rather than individual histories is that the city doesn't own the water company, and so we don't have the data about how much water people are using. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
All right. With that, we will go ahead and open up public comment on this item. So if there's any member of the public wishing to speak on this item, to let us know, have questions, let us know you're in favor of it, you oppose it, anything of that nature, go ahead and come to the lectern. Or if you're on the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand. I am not seeing anyone. Please do not hold back because I will be closing public comment if nobody comes forward. All right. Luke, I'm not seeing anyone on the phone. Is that correct? All right. So we will go ahead and close the public comment period. And has the city clerk had enough time to tabulate the results?
I have.
Okay. Excellent.
We do not have a majority protest.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I will ask if we don't have any other council comments, do we have a motion to approve recommendation 2?
Well, Mayor, I will move that we approve recommendation 2, but I would be curious from the city clerk how many protests we did have.
0.
Okay, thank you.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Barbeau. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
A motion by Barbeau, second by Daras. Roll call, please.
Just a question before you do that. Are we needing to adopt number three, since it's not a majority? It's neither a non-majority nor a majority protest, but we've got three options there.
I think we're doing 2A and 3.
We need to do 2 and 3.
Just so we scope this, make sure we know this, get the scope.
Do you want me to do them both together? It's separated out here, but I can do them both together if you like,
can,
Laura.
Because it's a non-majority, you can do them both together.
So take the motion for 2A and 3?
Yeah, it is to adopt recommendations 2A and 3.
Okay. And the second goes with that.
Yeah, resecond. Yes. Thank you.
All right.
Councilmember Barbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Daras?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. On to our second public hearing, which is amendments to the fee schedule. I will ask for any ex parte. All right, seeing none, we will move over to our Administrative Services Director, Jerry Ringel.
Thank you very much, and good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm pleased tonight to present the fee study. So this is the annual fee study update. As we just heard with the wastewater fees, we had gone quite a long time without raising them. So the concept here is to kind of keep up with the CPI or the inflation increase so that we don't kind of get behind and have to catch up. All right. So fees are charged on for cost recovery of the city providing certain services. These may include things like building and planning permits, recreation, or certain public safety services. The fees are calculated based on the cost to provide those services, or what California law refers to as cost reasonably borne. An extensive fee study was performed last year. The study determined how much it cost the city to provide each of these services. Armed with this knowledge, the cost to provide these services, council then sets policy on how much users should pay for the service. Youth sports programs have historically been subsidized by the city, meaning that participants are charged a fee less than what it actually costs to provide those services. Youth sports are partially tax-supported and partially user-supported. Yet other services, such as building permits, are 100% paid by the applicant. These are fully user-supported fees. Staff is proposing to reduce some of the fees to zero in order to further council strategic initiatives and due to the general community benefit of this type of fee. The fees proposed to be set at zero are things like the maintenance of sidewalks, curbs, gutters, street trees in the right-of-way, and non-city maintained roads. Broadband fiber installation is another fee that staff is recommending to set to zero to continue to encourage expansion of broadband in the city consistent with our broadband strategy. The update tonight represents just the annual inflation adjustment. The CPI adjustment amount is 5.57. Most of the fees in the draft schedule reflect only the CPI increase. Some fees, however, are fixed by state law and typically don't change. If adopted tonight, the amended fee schedule would go into effect in 60 days. And that completes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Were there any changes that have been made since this was published? Any changes? For instance, like the percentages, some of those things, were there any changes that we need to know about?
There were some internal discussions about,
specifically thinking like the public improvement plan check and public improvement inspection, just those percentages, are those?
Correct, right. So we would like to also propose that the minimum on page 105 of your agenda for fee 23055 for public improvement plan checks, that that minimum stay at the increased amount, but that the percentages and base value are the same as the prior year.
And that would be the case for everywhere, anywhere from that zero to 50,000 to the $2 million plus project, right? Cool. So those minimums would stay the same, but the percentages would go back to, would be consistent with what 2022 is right now.
Correct.
Okay. And then that would be the same on page 106.
Correct.
The minimum would remain the same, but sorry, the minimum would change by CPI, but the percentages would stay the same.
You.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm sorry, because I had a question on that as well, it didn't make sense to me to raise the percentages.
Yeah, so on both of those pages, we're not going to raise the percentages. They will stay the same.
But you're saying
the minimum will go up by CPI.
The minimum, so 0 to 50,000 might become 0 to 51,000.
No, the $1,000 minimum for the fee, the 1,056 is now the minimum. See in parentheses.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Okay, understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that still holds,
yeah,
but the percentage stays the same.
Right. Gotcha.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to
see
happen.
Okay. Yeah, just before we got going, I wanted to see if that was true. Okay, very good. So with that, questions for staff. Councilmember Darris.
Yeah, just one question for clarification for anybody that might be watching or listening in. Where, you know, encroachment permits for improvements like curb gutter and sidewalk, the permits don't cost anything, but you still got to get a permit. So you can't, I mean, I just want to make sure that people understand that. Okay. If you wouldn't mind just explaining that a little bit.
That is correct. We absolutely require that they still pull an encroachment permit. We're just making it a lot easier to do that financially. We still need to know legally, risk-wise, who is operating within the right-of-way. Staff still wants to look at that, make sure there's all traffic control regulations being adhered to, make sure that inspector is aware of that, so the inspector needs to go out and make sure that the project is being maintained or improved upon to certain city standards. It's a very easy process. We pride ourselves on the quick turnaround for those encroachment permits, especially on these kind of minor encroachment permits. We really want to encourage more investment in our right-of-way for private or for property owners, and so we think this is an excellent kind of middle ground to make sure that we continue to see improvements in those specific spaces.
I agree, and I thank you guys for proposing this, because I think this is good. I think that makes it easier for our residents to improve their properties, I think, is good. So thank you on that.
Yes, I had a question on the very last one, waiver of nominal amounts. We are changing the authority for you to waive nominal amounts from $10 all the way up to $11. And I think you might underestimating the faith we have in you to exercise good judgment. Because I know, you know, if we collect a $11 or let's say a $13 check, you know, in public works or in community development, you know, they've got to keep track of that and, you know, what it's for, what account it is. And they get to give it to your office and your office has to do it. You know, I realize you couldn't do that with every fee. Like, you know, you're going to collect a lot of $13 checks, let's say, in recreation. And that makes sense. That's what it's for. But on some of these areas, I would like, you know, for us, the council, to at least give you latitude for a higher amount. And do you see any problem with if we told you, you know, hey, $25 or something? Because it costs you more than that to process a check, I assume.
Yes, thank you. That's a great point. And we have no problem with that. Thank you.
Yeah. That we would, I mean, you know, we would expect, you know, the department heads and city manager to work something out, but that we raise that at least to $25, let's say. Okay, so that would work in your mind. Thank you.
All right. Well done. All right, I think we are ready to go to public comment on this item, so we'll open up to public comment. Any members of the public wishing to speak, please come to the lectern or raise your hand here on Zoom.
Jeff Hoslin, once again. My only concern with this is that we're still not accepting credit cards, and if we were doing that, it would streamline a lot of the process on the checks and the accounting. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to speak on this item? you're on the webinar, there's no one else in chambers that is wishing to speak, so please raise your hand if you would like to. I want to make sure we capture anyone that wants to speak on this item. All right, I am seeing none, so we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back to council.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
If I could have Director Rangel first address Mr. Roslin's question about the credit cards, and then I'll, yeah, absolutely.
That's a great question. We are working on getting that credit card processing going, so we are in the midst of processing that with our vendor, and we hope to have that up in the near future.
All right, thank you.
And will that apply the whole, I'm sorry, related to that, though, will that apply to, like, all departments and all fees or certain types of fees?
So recreation already has credit cards. Zoo has credit cards. So this will, the majority of it is for community development, central reception area. We are hoping to be able to roll this out to the police department, too, after we kind of get it solidified in City Hall. But that would pretty much cover all of the departments then.
And the fee is listed in here as 4.5%, right?
Correct. That would be for this particular credit card vendor. Currently, there's one at the zoo and recreation.
Thank you.
That's okay. So with this discussion, then what kind of fee, payments do we accept? There's check, cash, credit card, which we don't have yet. I know there's Venmo and stuff like that, which I personally don't use, but how else do people pay for their fees otherwise?
Mainly checks. Checks and cash. Cashier's check. Okay. So,
does the city
they bring
use
in
a
sheep.
Pardon me?
Someone brings in sheep.
Bring some blankets and a chicken or something?
Chickens.
Do we use Venmo or anything like that? Or does the city utilize that type of service?
We do not.
Okay. Good, because I don't either. Thank you.
Ron Swanson brings in gold. So we do capture, the city is able to capture the fees that it costs to deliver credit card services.
Correct. And we do also have, for paying TOT, we have a process for that as well.
Right. We've had that in place for a little while now.
Correct.
I understand. Okay. Thank you. And I think that all of us would agree with Council Member Barbeau's assertion that we trust you. And so, yes, why don't we raise that? Do you have a sense that would be a good amount, or would you need a little bit more, or a little bit, you know, where would you see that being appropriate?
I think 25 works, and okay. We'll kind of go with that for this year if that works with council, and then next year when we come back, we can give you a recommendation on that as well.
Okay. So I'd be looking for a motion for the agenda that includes the changes on pages 105 and 106 to the percentages, right, and raising that minimum for discretion at waiving to $25.
Right. I will move that we approve the fee schedule as presented by staff with the two amendments noted by the mayor.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilmember Barbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And that is an important one, as Director Rangel said. It's something where, since I want to say it was 2004, when it had been a while since we'd done a study, which is a pretty heavy lift, and you find out that after year after year after year, you're behind in covering the cost. And so this CPI adjustment that we're able to do every year prevents, you know, having to do what we're doing with wastewater right now. So thank you. Moving on to our first management report, which is the El Camino Downtown Infrastructure Enhancement Project. And I will turn this over to our Public Works Director. There he is, Mr. Nick DeBar. You have this nice blurred professional background. You look very professionally casual, or casually professional. I don't know what the right term is, but good evening.
Thank you. I think that's a compliment, so thank you, Mayor Moreno.
Yes.
So I'm excited to introduce this item. This is a long time in the making. This El Camino Downtown Infrastructure Enhancement Project. Next slide, Mr. Betts. By the way, Mr. Betts, thank you for filling in for me tonight. I appreciate that. So a little background on this. As I mentioned, it's 6 to 7 years in the making, even longer. The city envisioned this, but This is the road diet. I mean, it came by a number of names, road diet, street scaping, and, you know, complete streets and all that. But we had a project kickoff to have this holistic corridor plan in the downtown for El Camino from Highway 41 to the police station at Rosario. But just gives a little timeline here. I'm not going to beat this too hard, but 2017, we had a kickoff. We did a lot of traffic analysis. In fact, when we first started this project, that concept plan, to develop that concept plan, we relied very heavily on traffic and engineering and operational analysis to make sure that this was going to work, not just for current conditions, but for general plan build-out conditions. So we did extensive work on that, and it will work by dropping a lane in each direction. Then we had a number of public outreach workshops, very well attended. We had 12 in total in 2018 to 2020. August 11th of 2020, the council approved the overall concept plans for this corridor. And the plans were kind of loosely, but it was basically, we're dropping a lane in each direction. We're going to have parking in the middle. We're going to add all these amenities and go from there. In 2021, the council approved hiring Wallace Group to prepare construction plans for this project, and they've been working diligently on that with the original consultant, KTUA, who developed the concept plans. And we also came up with three concept plans that showed and showcased various aspects of the details for the downtown and the amenities that were available to consider. And here we are tonight. So we'd like to present that background information and community feedback to the council. Next slide, Mr. Betts. The overall objectives is safety, public safety for all users of the El Camino. We have many, many students that cross it East Mall every school day. That's a really critical one, but not only pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists, and all people that use this corridor. We also wanted, the second one was economic development. So economic development, supporting the businesses downtown, adding parking, enhancing, as I mentioned, bicycle and pedestrian access, and just overall safety was number one. Number two, economic development. Next slide, please. So I'm going to hand this off to Director Dunsmore to talk a little bit about the open houses we had and what we heard.
Thank you, Director DeBar. And recently, I'll say recently because we've actually had two phases of public outreach, but our most recent one last year actually consisted of 9 different meetings in a variety of different venues. A lot of online meetings we had a lot of meetings here, City Hall, really dived down into the details. We had the three concepts laid out, and we went through and really got a lot of great feedback. We had folks enter their information themselves into the computer and really kind of gave us a sense of what the good points of the project were, what the points were that people were concerned about. And we're able to take that data and really formulate the concept that's before you tonight, the final concept. So it was a fantastic, I'll call it very robust outreach activity. And, you know, for someone that doesn't have a whole ton of patience, this has caught me, this process over the last 5 years has taught me an incredible amount of patience. It's taken a long time to bring this project to fruition. But that's really good because it's given us time to really get everyone used to all the facets of the project, really tell everyone what the project's about, and really dispel the mysteries, the rumors, the science, the engineering behind the details. So I truly believe, I think what you have before you tonight is the fruition of years of that planning and engineering and public feedback and the whole bit. Is there another slide there, Ryan, that you'd like me to mention? Just the amount of people that we went through, not only residents, business owners, really focusing also on the employees for downtown. A lot of the response was very positive. Not everyone loves this design. That's okay. You can't get 100% of everyone to say this is the greatest thing ever. But instead, it's an opportunity to tell them why, you know, this is important for the city, why some of these things are really an improvement, and still hear their concerns and try and incorporate everyone's concerns into the project. Some of the comments were about maintenance and upkeep, public safety and oversight, the desire for the design to stay within the existing style of what we already have in downtown, making sure it's safe, it's well lit, and that we have opportunities for good parking and really comfortable public spaces. And I'm going to hand it right now to our consultant, who's really been helping us with the design and is going to continue carrying forward these elements. Sarah is here with Wallace, and she's going to take you through some of these details, show you some of these design aspects of the project, and we can kind of get into the bricks. I won't say get into the weeds, but get into the bricks, get into the details.
Thank you, Director Dunsmore. I'm Sarah Huffman. I'm a senior transportation engineer for Wallace Group, and I'm the project manager for this project. And it's been a privilege and very fun to work on this project over the past year or so. And like Nick mentioned at the beginning, we presented three different concept alternatives last time I was here before we took it to the public. And each of those concepts had various different amenities that were shown on the plans. And we really wanted to get the public's input on which items they liked and let them know they could mix and match between the three different concepts. So what we're showing tonight is the collection of all those comments put into a final concept plan that we will then be taking into construction hopefully next year. Next slide, please. So these are the different features that were selected through the public engagement process and also through feedback we received from City Council. Overall, we will be adding 120 new parking spaces to the downtown area, and that doesn't include what's already existing along the corridor. We will also be including some areas for motorcycle and bicycle parking, and we have also designated areas for commercial loading zones that would be available in the off-peak hours, and then also regular loading zones for passengers or food delivery services. And what was selected for the center parking area to differentiate it from the rest of the travel lanes was pavers down the middle. And so I've shown two different example photos of pavers. Those are from around downtown already. The brighter color, of course, is outside of City Hall. And we thought that would be a nice touch in that center stretch in front of Sunken Gardens to make it stand out. Next slide, please.
Sarah, actually, could I ask you a quick clarifying question on that last slide? Just for everybody as we're looking at this, it says 120 new parking spaces, including motorcycle and bicycle. Do you mean 120 vehicle spaces plus motorcycle and bicycle, or do you mean some of those 120 spaces are motorcycle and bicycle parking?
Good question. It's 120 vehicle spaces, and then there will be additional motorcycle and bicycle parking in the spaces that are little void areas between the regular parking areas.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Another major feature of this project is improving pedestrian safety through the corridor, and so for the four unsignalized intersections or unsignalized crosswalks, we're proposing to put in higher visibility crosswalks with the decorative pavers and pedestrian activated flashing beacons like the one shown in the center. At the East Mall crosswalk, since that has a high amount of pedestrians crossing, especially students, we wanted to give that an extra enforcement, and so we're proposing a pedestrian signal. And that'll be activated by the pedestrians. They'll give them the right of way to cross the street. So it'll improve pedestrian safety, but it'll also improve the traffic operations through downtown as it forces the pedestrians to queue up before crossing. Next slide, please. Some additional amenities we've included in the concept plan is a gateway arch over the roadway. There'll be one at the northern end and one at the southern end near the Colony Square driveway. And the selected lighting type for the corridor is these hanging pendant lights, similar to what was seen in Lancaster Boulevard. We're going to select a hanging lantern style that ties in with our downtown standards. And then we'll also include benches at key locations, like this one with the bar in the center that's over at the Centennial Plaza. Next slide, please. This concept also includes a large amount of landscaping, both in-ground and potted. We've included potted trees where there's underground utility conflicts that would not allow the roots to grow without interfering with the service. There's about 50 new trees planted throughout the median, as well as in the sidewalk and those existing tree wells. We'll also be including stormwater planters along the outer curb and gutter to treat water from our project and also serve as off-site compliance for new development projects downtown. Next slide, please. So in summary, I just wanted to go back to the project objectives, and you'll see that this final concept plan is a road diet in that it reduces the number of lanes. It increases the number of parking spaces downtown to 261. That does not include other downtown streets. It's just West Mall and El Camino Real. It provides traffic calming through the street narrowing and the additional amenities and crosswalk features. It'll really differentiate this corridor, portion of the corridor, as a downtown district with the overhead gateway arches. It'll improve safety while balancing traffic operations. And the center parking areas will also be flexible enough to be used as event spaces in the future. With that, I'm going to pass it back to Director DeBar. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. As I mentioned, this is really exciting. We didn't show the concept plan. We do have those slides where it's broken down, because on the screen here, you know, it's such a long area, it's very hard to see any of the detail. But we do have the concept plan broken down into segments that are easy to see. If the mayor and the council so desire, Sarah and I can walk through that. Or if you have questions, we can reference that as well. But the recommendation tonight, as I mentioned, we had already approved some of the concept plans, plural, and shopped those to the community. And we're coming back tonight asking the council to review and approve the final concept plan for El Camino Downtown Infrastructure Enhancement Plan, and to direct staff and the design consultant to move forward with preparation a final construction bid package. So Wallace has been working very diligently on construction plans. We've got all the survey, we've got a lot of the things in place. We're kind of at a point now, or a crossroads, where we need to select those final details and the layout for the corridor. And this final concept plan will allow us to move ahead and put together the final construction drawing set that will go out for bid, and we can get a construction cost and move forward with the project. So Mayor, I'll turn it back to you, and if you want us to walk through the actual plan, we can do that, or as I mentioned, we can reference it with any questions that the council or public may have.
Thank you, Director. And what I want to preface this with is this is really the public's design. We've taken input from everyone, and as Director Dunsmore said, not everyone's going to be happy with every single aspect, but staff and working with Wallace really did their best to bring together all of the elements that our community said they wanted as part of this project. So that's really what we're looking at here tonight. If we move forward with this, directing you to move forward with preparation of the final construction bid package, when do we expect that to
go out and actually start breaking ground.
I maybe Sarah can correct me, but right now we're hoping to have final construction plans ready to bid early next year, when I probably first quarter into June time frame. So before the summer, before this time next year, but even perhaps the sooner we can bid that out, we're hoping, I'm hoping, and Sarah can maybe correct me, I don't want to put her on the spot, to have this bid out in the first quarter next year so we can get a contractor on board, and as soon as weather permits, we can start proceeding with construction. Okay. Sarah, did you want to comment on that?
Only that I agree.
Excellent.
Okay. And by the way, Sarah is an Atascadero resident, so she's super excited to work on this, and feels, I know she is very honored to work on this as well. So
very invested in the project.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Director Dunsmore, I will tell you that my learning of patience was with the sign ordinance when I first came on council, so I understand how you feel. And I do want to thank all of our staff. I think many of us, if not all of us here on council and many members of the public, we came during those public engagement meetings. And it was not just community development and public works there. There were staff from every single department at each of these meetings, including police and fire, because a lot of the questions we would get are, you know, concern about what if there is an emergency? Can the fire truck get through here? Can it turn? What's the radius? People concerned about a lot of things. So everyone from finance to fire was at these meetings to help answer questions. No matter what came up, we had somebody there to address and go over those issues with the members of the public. So a lot of thanks to our staff who put a lot of time and effort into that. We appreciate it. With that, let's ask questions with regards to the presentation that we had from council, and if there's more that we want to see, we can go there. So I will kind of start with my right and come on down. Is there Councilmember Newsom?
I don't really have any questions, just mostly wanted to comment on how far it's come, and just nice to see it on print and color. So thank you for all the hard work. It's nice to see it come together.
And before I launch into a couple of questions, I too want to thank the staff from all departments for engaging with this rich comment process. And people should know that public comments made a difference in the design. Everything from the folks whose comments in the earlier rounds about traffic situations caused greater involvement of a traffic engineer in the project to address some of those issues, to fifth graders who told us not to do bike lockers because of what kids would do to each other in them. So lots of good input that has shaped this project for the community. A couple questions. As we're looking at the pendant lights, do those wires go over the traffic lanes, or are they just in the middle?
They are going to be in the middle of the median area, and we'll still have the regular street lights along the sidewalks that we have right now, the decorative, but those hanging pendant lights would generally be over and in the confines of the center median parking area.
Okay, and will we be able to do lights that are shielded at the top so that we're not adding great gubugs of light pollution into the community?
We sure can. Yeah, I think that's one of our great things up here in Atascadero is a night sky, so we want to keep that.
Okay. I was looking at this, and one of the things I was trying to figure out was where the bike racks ended up. Could you pull up something and clarify if there are multiple locations or how that's being handled?
We haven't specifically located the exact locations of the bike racks, but there's some pockets in between the parking lanes on the northern end that would fit bike racks. We've also considered adding them to the sidewalks in certain locations.
Okay.
So Councilmember Fung, we would also put them near the bus stops as well. So people that are using the bus stops will, you know, that's another key location that we'll look at.
Okay, great. Thank you. And the if this we're getting 120 new parking spaces with this. If we were going to do a parking garage, to put 120 spaces in one spot, roughly what kind of cost would that be?
I think maybe the city manager can weigh in too, because I know she's done a little research on this, but I think it was like, this was old numbers, but I think it was like $30,000 per stall for a parking structure.
It's gone up quite a bit, actually.
So let me tell you, a recent local jurisdiction is paying over $120,000 per spot in a parking garage.
And then you lose the property, too. You've got to build it on a property somewhere. So.
Yes.
Yeah, so if we were doing, even if we did a better deal and got $100,000, a better deal, a spot, we'd still be looking at, you know, a $12 million project for those 120 parking spaces. Then you have to find the space for it, and it takes up that. Versus this, compare that to the cost of this project. This project will be lower, right? And we're then the cost of doing that parking with a parking garage, and we get all of the extra benefits of pedestrian safety, plus these, you know, a cool downtown, you know, that people are going to want to hang out in, and it'll be attractive to businesses and much safer for folks. I have that correct, right? Okay.
Yes.
And then could you bring up, in terms of the design, there are a lot of oak trees in here in the medians now. Could you bring up the detail on the section that is the between the Sunken Gardens and La Plaza and the plaza on El Camino Real?
Yes, that's this slide here. And to clarify, we are only showing two oak trees currently that are specifically called out. Those are the two that are on either side of that, on that block, in line with the cedar trees and the Sunken Gardens. And then the symbols for trees throughout the rest of the project, those are going to be based on our approved plant list for the project. They're not all going to be oak trees.
Okay, so the one that's in the middle of the block is not necessarily going to be a big oak tree.
That's correct.
Okay, so can that be done so that we preserve some of those sight lines that we have between the plaza and City Hall, and making sure that City Hall stays visible from the freeway?
Yes. Yeah, we can consider a smaller tree for that location.
Okay, and then do you have, in this, and thank you for the bigger printouts here, could we look at that maybe from not the top, but from a more of a ground level perspective, at the intersection there at East Mall and El Camino, that is our biggest sort of traffic issue?
Maybe the first slide.
Pedestrian thing?
Probably the perspective we had on the first page might be the best view for that.
Okay. That'll do. So is that tree there at the front that's essentially at the East Mall intersection also going to be necessarily an oak tree?
That was the plan. That one and the one on the other side of the block. So they would be a nice focal statement right at the Sunken Gardens.
And does that work from a traffic safety perspective? And you've got to be able to see the pedestrians at that intersection really clearly.
Yes. And Nick, would you like to go?
Sure. That tree, as it grows, we would lift the canopy up. So, and we'd make sure that it wouldn't be blocking the traffic signal, the beacon hawk that is right there. So definitely would need to be maintained. And it might even be shifted slightly, maybe even to the north, but as it grows, we would lift that canopy up so there would be no sightline issues with it, and then would trim that back to make sure that the traffic signal lights would not be blocked by for the vehicles. And it's still one thing that, you know, if it, we're still qualifying an oak tree right there. We thought these larger planter areas, which are more conducive to have an oak tree or like a stately tree as such as that, would be real opportunities to put, you know, a signature tree in. So we'd like to put one there, but if it doesn't work safety-wise, we may need to consider another tree. But right now, we think it'll work just fine. It's going to need to be trimmed and maintained as it grows.
And as that, if that is a full oak tree, and once it gets fully grown, what does that do to the sight lines from the La Plaza, or the plaza area that we constructed there, and Sunken Gardens and City Hall? Are they going to feel like one sort of part of the same space, or are they going to be? Are we going to create a separation there that we maybe didn't plan?
And the idea was to frame those spaces so you're seeing right through the park, right to that plaza, and have this outside of that line of sight on either end. So right now it would be sort of in line with the trees that are already in the park, so not blocking the view of City Hall, not blocking the view of the park, not blocking the view of the plaza, so it all act as one space on one axis, but not being broken with a line of sight with trees. That's what this design is trying to do, so you see right through.
Okay.
And one option for those two oak trees, I mean, if they went with a tree variety like a valley oak, which is deciduous, it grows really tall and it's thin and it doesn't have that dense canopy like a live oak does, that could be an option too. And I think they're still trying to decide what the perfect thing is that gets the canopy up high, doesn't trick the line of sight, and provides that framing mechanism for the whole area.
Okay. And then would we still be able to have a line of sight from the freeway to City Hall through that area?
Absolutely, because that same line of sight over the top of the trellis feature that's in the plaza would be maintained all the way through the park, all the way to City Hall. That wouldn't be broken by these because they'd be outside of that line of sight.
Okay, great. I think that's... Yes, that's everything on my list for now. Thank you.
Councilmember Pufelbaum.
Thank you. There's a lot of features in here. Some of them aren't my first choice, but I don't think my choices are really any better than others, and certainly not better maybe than the collective choice and analysis done by staff. But I do want to make sure, in having a question here, is I assume that in each of these different areas, consideration was given to long-term maintenance versus short-term appearance. So, for example, when you're using pavers versus stamped concrete, you know, that was considered, okay, yeah, this pavers look better, but do they have maintenance issues? Are they going to have a higher cost down the road? Same with, you know, the kind of trees we use, because it says 18 new coast live oak trees. And I think about those around my house. I think of all the pointy leaves that are, you know, be irritating to deal with, and anybody has them overhanging a roof, although that wouldn't be the case here. You know, they might have issues. I assume consideration is given to all the tree options. And then probably most importantly, the crosswalk with in-pavement flashers. We have a couple of those, and it seems to me that we've had a lot of maintenance issues with those being down from time to time, so this is more of a public works question, as to whether or not those are, you know, just going to create a maintenance headache down the road. So those are my questions about maintenance issues on some of these things, and then I have one more question after that.
I can start answering my question. I'll start with the easy one, the last one about those in pavement lights. Our plan is to remove all the in-pavement lights. So with the additional enhanced crosswalks, especially that Beacon Hawk at East Mall, that'll be act almost like a traffic signal, and we'll have much more prominency and warning for the motorists. And then the other crosswalks, one at Virginia Plaza, the one at Entrada, and there's another one at Galaxy Theater between the Tesla charging station and Galaxy Theater. Those will not, our plan is to remove the impavement lights because they have been very tedious as far as maintenance and going out and everything else. And it's very obvious when they do go out, and then we scramble to get that replacement light from the manufacturer. So there's been a lot of issues, so we like to remove those. And the enhanced crosswalks are going to be much more prominent than they are right now at Galaxy Theater in Virginia Plaza.
But it does say in the report, though, 4 push-button crosswalks with in-pavement flashers.
Oh, it does? Okay. That might be a typo.
Key highlights of the proposed plan include, you know, blah, 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 and then 4 push-button crosswalks with in-pavement flashers. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah, I would recommend against the in-pavement lights just because of the maintenance issue we've had with those. It was a great idea. You know, if they work, it's great. It's when they don't work that they it doesn't. It looks unmaintained almost when one or two of them are out. So that would be something we'll talk with Wallace, but my recommendation would be not to put the in-pavement lights on. As far as oak trees, coastal live oaks are very messy. They drop leaves year-round. They're an evergreen. As Phil mentioned, you know, there's the valley oaks and some black oaks and some other tree varieties that might fit a little bit better. They're different shape. Coastal live oaks get a big canopy on them, so those might be more appropriate in larger landscaped areas, maybe away from intersections. But we have given a lot of consideration to maintenance. That's been one of my constant themes because, but I got to tell you, this doing this project will add maintenance. I mean, it just is going to. But it's kind of, you know, one of those prices you maybe the city needs to have to have these amenities and make it a place for placemaking and a place to come to. And was there one third one, Council Member Poole?
Let's see.
Pavers versus concrete.
Pavers versus stamped concrete, oh. Yeah.
Yeah, pavers. So pavers will probably be less or even the same maintenance, probably less maintenance than a stamped concrete. So the pavement, asphalt pavement in this section of El Camino is 12 inches plus. So what we would do with the pavers in the middle, it'd be milled out, like a couple inches milled down. And then we put like a quick set cement or concrete down to level it out. And then the pavers would go on top of that. So the pavers would never settle. They'd stay in place. And that's been our standard recently, including with the City Hall parking lot. So the pavers on that sidewalk right across on East Mall there across from the diagonal parking, those are actually set on concrete and they are very, very solid. So those don't move a bit. So this would be very similar to that.
Great, thank you. I mean, I suppose they might still get weeds in them, but if it's sitting on top of asphalt and concrete, that's pretty secure. That's good to know. So thank you for those answers. Last question. It says no direct fiscal impact as a result of council action on this item. It seems to me that some of these choices must have some fiscal impact, but did you say no fiscal impact because, you know, down the road we'll be letting a big contractor and so, you know, we're not spending any money tonight? Because it does seem there must be some fiscal impact. Maybe it's too hard to discern.
Yeah, it's, I mean, everything has a fiscal impact, but the recommendation tonight does not have a direct impact as to, you know, additional consulting costs or things like that. We do have an estimated construction cost that Wallace has prepared for this concept plan, but in the grand scheme of things, pendant lights versus, you know, regular, some other kind of lighting, is pretty somewhat inconsequential to the overall cost of the project at $8 million.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Darris.
Yeah, thank you. I just have one quick question, but I'll start with a few comments. I think it's a great design. You guys did a great job. I think this is outstanding. I really like the hanging lights. I think that's going to just be an awesome feature in the evening time. And of course, we all know this is going to be a huge change to downtown, but I think it's going to be just a great improvement to what our downtown is going to look like. But getting back to the oak tree, just one little quick question on that is, what is the ground cover around that oak tree is being planned? If we're going to, or oak trees, there's a couple of them, I guess.
Sarah, do you want to answer that one?
Yes, I'd say I'm not sure on the full ground cover drip line size of the oak tree, but we're only proposing them in our very large planters. It wouldn't be suitable for the smaller ones. I think we're looking for at least 7 feet diameter.
Okay, because I know the oak trees, I mean, there's a lot of oak trees that we've had in the past. I think we've kind of stopped the process or the practice of pavers going around the base of oak trees because it looks really nice, but then they die within 3 or 4 years. So I know oak trees really require just basically bare dirt to the perimeter or to the extent of their canopy. So I'm just wondering how this is going to lay out. Or, I mean, maybe this is a different kind of oak tree. I'm not an arborist, so.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be placing the pavers all the way up to the oak tree. It'd be in a very large planter.
Okay.
But you're right, we can look into that more.
All right. Thank you. That's all I have. But I think it's a great job. Thanks, guys.
My concern is that the ground cover around an oak tree is oak leaves.
Yeah, me too.
And acorns. All right. My only remaining, and it's less a question than a bit of a comment, just making sure that with the commercial loading zones for deliveries, that we really streamline that. We talk to the professionals that we need to make sure that we have that handled in the way that works for those that know what needs to be done. So whether you're talking to someone from like a Cisco Food Services or a Giordano's to figure out what the needs are, or talk to, you know, folks on Price Street in Pismo that have this kind of setup, but making sure that the commercial drop-off, since we're not going to be able to block one lane of traffic anymore, we got to make sure that is dialed in and we don't do something unintentional where suddenly it's causing problems. So with that, what I would like to do is open this up to public comment for members of the public wishing to speak. Come to the lectern or raise your hand in the Zoom webinar. We'll set the 3-minute timer. And welcome first speaker.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin once again. I was involved in this project when it started. I did attend some meetings. I did make some comments. Excuse me. A few things have changed over the last 7 years of this build-out. So my questions come into play, and I'll take the first one that you just spoke about, Mayor, which is making sure that a 53-foot semi has a place to offload in the downtown. I think that's very important. And like you said, we can't have designated hours because we will hurt businesses. The next one is that pedestrian signal. We've got to do something, which we all know, to slow traffic down. Our former chief of police, I'm sure, is thrilled that we have all this traffic calming finally happening. But the one area which would go from the high school back over to the school by City Hall, certain hours of the day, it is blinding sunlight. So we've got to make sure that particular crosswalk is taken into consideration. And I hope we don't do something totally ugly like a city south of us has done. And I'll name Broad Street. Those pedestrian walk signs are ugly and would really take away from this project. So we might need a different consideration there. And on the big change, well, the two things that I saw on the presentation, are we making East Mall and West Mall both one ways? Are we switching them? I was really confused up top there. I'm in favor of it, but I just want to make sure we didn't make a mistake there. And the big change that's happened over the last 7 years, whether some of us like it or not, is we now have electric vehicles that play into transportation. If we're going to dig up the ground and do this, would it make sense to be putting some charging stations in the downtown? And granted, you can contract with different companies, so it's not an expense for the charging station or the electricity, and maybe adding some type of solar to also add to charging these stations. Just a thought, so we don't have to come back and spend a lot of money in 5 years to do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Any other members of the public wishing to speak? Anyone in chambers? Anyone on the webinar? You can raise your hand using the raise hand icon at the bottom of the screen. I mean, I know we've had a lot of public comment over the 7 years, but tonight we welcome any more that anyone has. All right, I'm not seeing any, so last chance here on the webinar to raise your hand, or anyone here in chambers? All right, seeing none, I will go ahead and close public comment and bring that back to staff. And if you want to address the questions of the East Mall, West Mall, and the potential for electric charging stations.
So East Mall and West Mall will be one way under this. And it was one of those things, as I mentioned, extensive traffic analysis, traffic modeling, and it reversing West Mall to be opposite, going from Lewis to El Camino one way, does a few things. It actually gives us more parking, and we can do angle parking again, Sunken Gardens, just mirrored from East Mall. So that's pretty exciting. And what it does primarily, though, is it allows traffic to flow better. So especially during that school drop-off and pickup period, that's actually going to alleviate some of the congestion with that. The other one, I know Mr. Osmond mentioned some crosswalk signs to city to the south. I can talk to him another time about that. But we do have to comply with the MUTCD, the California version of the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. It does give some flexibility. Some of those crosswalk signs, to be honest, can be a little obnoxious. They almost look lime green or things like that. But we will use something that is tasteful, as the most tasteful sign that we can find to match the downtown character. And I might add just also that talking about the downtown character, this is going to kind of match existing streetscape standards, very similar to what has already been installed and we continue to install, including some of the wayfinding signs for parking and those things. So we want to really accommodate some visitors when they come for Tamale Fest or whatever it might be, to direct them to the parking areas. And then the charging stations and consideration, we actually met Mr. Betts has actually been meeting with some people from the Air Pollution Control District on locations to put charging stations. There's some grant money that we're trying to chase, free grant money, or just a small matching amount. And we, while we haven't included that in this downtown plan, it's something that we could add. You know, either plumb out some conduit out to the center medians or other places. I would not probably recommend putting it in the core of the downtown, but maybe to the south, like around the Galaxy Theater, between the bridge, Atascadero Creek Bridge and Galaxy Theater entrance. There's quite a few parking stalls down there in the angled area. So that might be one good location to perhaps maybe consider it, but we're open to whatever the council, thinks would be appropriate to it. So, but we do not have it added at this point, but it might be something that if there's an opportunity and it's something we want to do, we could do. So,
thank you, Director.
I'll turn that back to you, Mayor.
Yeah, I think there's been other opportunities. I'll look to our city manager. I think in the past we've talked about grant funds and potentially locating that in the city hall parking lot.
But I think, I don't know that it needs to be a part of this project so much as that is something that we are looking at, and where's the viability or feasibility of putting that in somewhere in the downtown.
That is what we've been looking at. We have been looking at the downtown. Ryan Betts has been doing a ton of work. There is some economy as a scale, so you do need to have so many charging stations to make it worth the investment to do so. Trying to take those in that few number of parking spots right there. Certainly the parking spots at City Hall are conveniently located for both Colony Square, the downtown, and everything. And I so think that's where we're focusing. Ryan can probably give you a better idea of where exactly we are on the process, or we could give you an update at a later time, whichever you prefer.
If you want to just briefly, because it's not part of tonight, but just to address that, if you want to tell us, and if we want an update another time, we can have that.
Things are in the works. We are
well done. Thank you.
Bye. No. See, we're identifying council and staff already proactively plan for EV charging stations in City Hall parking lot. They have what Nick referred to as those conduits, so we can kind of tap into that. There's about five or six spaces that front, I think, Lewis Avenue, across the street from middle school, which makes sense for some of the teachers that attend middle school would like to use those charging stations, plus folks that visit the downtown. There is grant opportunities out there. I'm working cooperatively with some local agencies on what that looks like and feels like. It looks promising. We'll come back to council with some thoughts and ideas, but I am pursuing those as we speak.
Thank you very much. All right, so what I was just kind of making some notes on, the most kind of feedback slash, I won't even call it concerns, but just the items of discussion, you know, had to do with the trees, particularly any oak trees, and just really noticing, you know, what is the maintenance, the shape, the potential for, you know, just things that maybe we weren't thinking about, which you guys are probably already thinking about that anyway, but we're sitting here thinking about it, and we want to make sure that, you know, whatever trees are, of course, safe, so that it's not blocking, as Mayor Pro Tem Funk said, you know, lights or signage, and as others have mentioned, that the maintenance is minimized as much as possible. And that we, as Councilmember Dara says, don't put something in that, you know, 3 years later dies because of the, you know, constraints around the oak tree. So just paying attention to those things. The in-pavement flashers, it sounds like we're removing that. Possibly that was not meant to be there, or, yeah, Director DeBar is on top of that. And then, you know, the other thing of making sure commercial deliveries, that we really are on top of that, that we address that in a way that is really going to work for our restaurants, and making sure we're talking to the right people so we do what needs to be done. Any other concerns, feedback? Yes, Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Yeah, I want to come back to the nature of the signal at the East Mall Crossing, which is our biggest pedestrian hazard. I was under the understanding that we are doing what is a standard traffic light, but is just for pedestrians, so that you'll have, you know, red, yellow. The cars looking at it will see red, yellow, green, and it will be green until the pedestrians get a turn, and then they'll have a standard red light. Rather than, there were a couple of mentions about a beacon hawk, which is, my understanding, is a signal that is off until it's on. So can you distinguish what we're actually planning on that?
Want to answer that one, Sarah?
Go for it, Nick.
Oh, right, I can too. The beacon hawk, it has a couple different setups. I mean, I mentioned the beacon hawk. You know, there's one down on Foothill and a few other places down in Slope. But you can also operate them so they look like your traditional traffic signal. So if there's not a call put in by a pedestrian to cross the road there, it's just going to be green all the time. But then when that call comes in, and when it'll sync up with West Mall and the other, you know, the West Mall signal as well, it'll put in a call. And when it's appropriate to do that, it'll turn yellow, and then it'll turn red about pedestrians to cross. And then once they're safely across, it'll go back to green. It'll stay green until the next call comes in. So There will be four push buttons at the East Mall crossing. So there'll be two in the center median in the refuge area. So people park in the middle area and they walk over, you know, to cross at East Mall. They can push the button and then cross the road. But as Mr. Dunsmore loves to talk about, they won't even need to do that because it's going to be so safe. They probably won't even need a traffic signal to cross. But we still are providing that for public safety. And and the lighting at these crosswalks. I mean, right now, many of our crosswalks are not super well lit, but we really want to get those crosswalks well lit on each corner. And this plan also has some bump outs, additional bump outs on some of those corners too for pedestrians. So I know I answered way too many questions for one question on that, and I apologize. So
no, that's okay. It's a really important feature of the project to make sure that the kids are safe and that the kids in the cars take turns and that we can manage that. And that was something we saw in the public comment of people wanting to make sure that drivers were looking at the most familiar signal light when they're approaching that so that they will behave, you know, at least we hope that they obey the red lights and behave appropriately and keep everybody safe. Okay, thank you.
Any other council comments? I would be looking then with that direction that I had summarized. Look for a motion.
I'll move that we approve the final concept plan with the changes noted by the mayor in her recap.
And less about changes, more about direction. Is that
right?
I want to make sure everybody's clear too on what we talked about. Anything I often will say things and then it's like, wait a minute, let's clarify. Any questions based on that? No? Okay. So we have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau and I think a second. Mayor Pro Tem mm-hmm. Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. So we're on to our discussion of potential text amendments to Titles 3 and 9 of the Planning and Zoning Code. And I'm thinking, why don't we take a brief break? It is 7:37. How about we come back at 7:45? All right. We were so enjoying our break, we went 4 minutes over, but we are back now. All right. City Council returning from a brief recess, and we're going to go into our final item, which is a discussion of potential zone text amendments to Titles 3 and 9 of the Planning and Building Code, or Planning and Zoning. And I will move this over to our Community Development Director, Mr. Phil Dunsmore. I had to give him a moment to sit down, so I tried to say that very slowly.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Mayor. And good evening, Mayor and Council. We're going to talk about potential. I'll underline the word potential zoning text amendments. And actually, not just zoning. This one also includes one from Title III. But what we typically do is once a year, we like to do a little cleanup in the zoning, and we throw a batch of amendments together so we can be efficient with our staff time. And so tonight we're going to show you some ideas, and at the council's pleasure, we'll come back at a future date following a planning commission hearing with an ordinance to actually do some of these amendments. So tonight we're just going to introduce some topics to you, give you some broad concepts of why we're doing these changes, and see what you think. I've also got staff available online to help me interpret some of these things if I forget, because there's quite a few details here. But background, it's just a preview. This does take a future action by the Planning Commission. Anytime we amend Title IX, it takes a Planning Commission action. And then ultimately, I was sharing my screen right before the break, and then it kicked me off. I'll come back to that. Thanks, Luke, for letting me know. Hold on just a moment. Let me get you back up there. All right. We'll get this right back in line. I was talking away. It was nothing really to see anyway, but it looks better now. Let's get that going. All right, and it's basically three different categories of things we're going to bring you tonight. One of them is really just clarification of topics. Another one is changing the development standards so we can get a little bit better of a streamlined review. We're always trying to get streamlined review. And the other one is some things that we have that have changed from state law or changed internally. We have inconsistencies, so we've got to fix those. So I've got them numbered, and the numbering I'm going to show you isn't really going to follow in a numerical order because we've kind of reordered a few things at the last minute because we batched them a little bit better. But first of all, in the zoning section, towing and impound yards don't really have a really good definition of a towing service, and right now they're only included under the definition of a wrecking yard. And so we wanted to change that. We got a new request recently for someone who wanted to operate a towing business, and we found out that it's very challenging to locate those in town because they're tied to a definition of a wrecking yard. So we wanted to clarify that. Another one's about co-working in downtown, something we really love to have really attract in downtown, but also, unfortunately, has been a little bit of a loophole because in a certain section of our downtown, we don't particularly want offices on the ground floor. But in this case, co-working is an allowed use on the ground floor in our downtown commercial district. We wanted to clarify that that is not necessarily exactly what we were trying to say with the zoning. And then some clarification on special events, something we want to promote in Atascadero. We want businesses to be able to have special events. We want to be able to do that without us getting in the way. But then again, there's some special events that need a little bit of permitting because they're going to erect a structure, they're going to change their parking lot, they're going to do some big thing, and we want to be able to have some review of that. And then one of the topics here is also oversized equipment. What does oversized equipment mean? It means someone who has a giant dump truck, a tractor trailer, a big backhoe, a big thing that's different than your typical everyday transportation vehicle. Like even if you have a big dually truck, that's your transportation. But in this case, we've had a number of home occupations where they might be a contractor or something else, and they have these huge things in their backyard that just don't fit the character of the neighborhood, and we get complaints on them. So we need to address that. Now, you'll see the numbering here of some other ones. Where's number 8? See, it's missing. I actually have it on a different page. I wanted to clump these together. And I'll just allude to the fact I have a separate page or even two pages on each one of these topics in this presentation that we can jump to. But I want to give you a quick overview up front, and then I'm going to kind of brush through some of these topics because I don't want to spend 2 or 3 hours going through everything. But I want to kind of go to the ones where we want to give them some specific attention. So a few of these items here are really related to development standards. We've had a couple of requests recently for a smaller care facility, but our lot size minimum is pretty big. And recently we've had this one where they wanted to create a care facility in a multifamily district and add a unit to accommodate this transitional housing, but we weren't able to accommodate that without saying, hey, this care facility could be on a smaller lot size, less than a half an acre. That's what that amendment is associated with. We can talk more about that detail. Number 6 there, about mechanical and electric equipment screening. Really, that speaks to those big backflow preventers that you see out in the street and things that we wanted to be able to address. We've been addressing them through the Design Review Committee. We've been addressing them through development projects, but actually to have some clarification in the code that we can point to so we don't have to rely on our staff all the time to be able to do that. Same with barbed wire or it's really called concertina, not Constantine. That word is wrong. And that name, concertina wire, is that circular razor wire. And they actually named that from that musical instrument, the concertina, you know, that has the bellows to it. And then the minimum lot size on accessory structures, we'll talk about that a little bit. When we did our recent code updates a year or two ago, we simply had the terminology of conforming lot. And unfortunately, what happened with that, it restricted too many lots and pushed them into a use permit process, whereas our amendment was trying to get more of those out of the use permit process, but instead actually setting a lot size threshold such as an acre or an acre and a half is a far better way to do that rather than just say conforming lot. So we'll talk about that. The rest of these, you see the numbering doesn't match here, but they're numbered this way on purpose because we sort of batched them differently after we wrote the staff report. Card rooms. Now, let me talk about card rooms real quick, and I can talk about it a little more later, but card rooms are already a use that, in every single case, is going to require a conditional use permit. They're in a category called personal services restricted, which anytime somebody wants to open a card room, they're going to have to come in for a conditional use permit. They're going to go straight to the Planning Commission. We only actually allow 6 card room tables in the entire city. Right now, that allocation is all used up by 1 card room facility, Outlaws. So technically right now, we don't allow any more card rooms in the city unless they were to change or close and go somewhere else. But what we're wanting to do here is modify our business license process, not that approval process for getting a new business, but the business license process itself requires city council approval and a very comprehensive list of background checks that was adopted back in the 1980s. We still need some of those background checks, but we don't need the city council approval for the business license process because the discretionary approval already exists for the overall business of a card room. So it was almost a duplicative process of going to, first of all, Planning Commission to get approved for the use and the actual thing happened, and then actually getting the business license having to be approved, even a change of ownership by the city council, which is a bit awkward. So some cleanup there, some cleanup with the daycare standards to match the state regulations, some clarifications with our setbacks, some clarifications with our parking requirements for restaurants, and then driveway surfacing requirements to meet our current fire code. Now, the rest of these slides that I've got here go into the details of each of those topic areas. So I'm going to kind of go through these pretty quickly, and just stop me if you want to really talk about it further. This one I kind of want to talk about because I want to just explain a couple things here, first of all. Right now, we really only have one, and actually we got one more recent one, didn't we? A second towing business in the city of Atascadero. Doing this change wouldn't affect anybody that's in the city today. But what this would do is basically create a separate land use for a towing business. Historically, these towing businesses were tied to gas stations because gas stations were service stations. Gas stations had service bays. Gas stations did your auto repair. That's how our land use is classified today. But gas stations don't do that anymore. When you go to a gas station, you don't see anybody. You put your card in a machine and you get your gas and you drive away. You can't get your car towed there. It's a different thing. So our zoning is set up for that old-fashioned way. So towing kind of got left out of the picture and got tied in with an auto wrecking yard. We no longer have an auto wrecking yard in Atascadero, and don't believe we even have the land to accommodate a wrecking yard in Atascadero for vehicles. So we got a towing yard recently that came into town and said, hey, I'd love to locate in your city. And we had to get creative with the zoning to find a location for them in the industrial zone. Yet the category that they're in requires them to be 500 feet away from the nearest residence. And the reason for that is because they're considered a wrecking yard. But they're not really a wrecking yard, they're just a towing service. So this definition would alleviate that issue, allow a towing service to locate in the industrial zone or with a use permit in the service commercial zone, but be their own definition. It could have some standards for the size of their impound yard and things like that. So that's kind of an important one, but it wouldn't affect any existing businesses in town or change how they're able to operate. The co-working one, I mentioned that. Do you have any questions on that one?
Let's go through the first four, and then we'll come back and do any questions.
Okay, that sounds good. I think I've already mentioned about the co-working one. It's an allowed use on the ground floor in downtown. We wanted to alter that. Special events. Let's get into this one just a little further. Right now, we don't have a very good definition of special events. So it's easy for staff to misinterpret, hey, if someone wants to do some outdoor sales and put their clothing on the in the front of their business, or they want to have a small pop-up and they want to just have, you know, someone that has a booth outside, is that a special event? And I think in most cases it's not really a special event. A special event is something bigger when you're changing a site, you're changing the circulation, you're using up your parking lot, you're putting up a big tent that, you know, our fire marshal might be concerned about, where we need to step in and say, hey, we need to look at this, make sure we've got public safety covered, and it needs that permit approval. So we wanted to increase the threshold and put a definition of when a special event permit's required so that we're not having to do a special event permit every time someone steps outside their normal business plan. That's really what we're trying to do there. There's another category to that, too, and you probably all noticed the business called The Lot that's over on Traffic Way. That's created a little bit of a unique situation as well, because we've had some business owners approach us and say, hey, how can they do that? How can they just go to a vacant lot and set up a business and they don't have to pay the fees, they don't have to have a restroom, they don't have to have you know, wastewater fees they're going to pay, they don't have to have parking. How does that happen? And these are all really good questions. How do we deal with temporary uses or temporary events on vacant lots? Now, our code already deals with that and says they can do that up to four times a year. They can have a temporary event. But what if someone wants to go to a vacant lot and they want to do continuously, you know, operate some kind of a business? How do we deal with that? So that's something that staff's exploring as well, and love to hear your feedback on that particular topic. It's not something we're saying is a real problem, but there is a little bit of an inequity there, and we don't want to end up with things like we've had a few years ago where we had a skating rink, or we've had different things that kind of go in a unique way that don't represent the quality of what our community is becoming. But at the same time, we've got vacant lots that do need interim uses. We've got things in Colony Square where we'd love to see interim land uses. We'd love to see things as long as they can have the components that create a quality space. So something to talk about that's associated with special events, but not quite exactly it. And the last one I think I mentioned previously about the oversized equipment. This would just limit that to one item and require it to at least be partially screened from the street and the adjacent parcels. And really identifying what heavy equipment is. Yeah, there's a lot of personal vehicles that actually would weigh 5,000 pounds. You know, if I buy myself a nice big Ford F-350 dually, if I could ever afford that, they're like $100,000 now. But they probably would weigh 5,000 pounds or more. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about things that are really equipment that aren't your daily driver vehicle, and they're on your residential property as part of your home occupation business. We're not saying you can't have that, but should be something that, okay, you just have one of those pieces of equipment on your property and it's not stored right out in your front yard. And that's the first four. Did we say we're going to go through four or five?
Yeah, we're doing one through four, that's and right. Then five, six, seven, yeah. And nine, and yeah. Then eight, ten, yeah. And also to be clear, for the public's edification, we are
giving you feedback tonight on whether or not to move forward with these and then bring us back the actual text amendments in the future.
Absolutely. This is just potential. So we're talking about these concepts, these ideas, looking for council direction on what we should bring back. By no means are we proposing any text amendments tonight.
Yeah, so I want to let you know whether you're listening, watching, there's another bite at the apple coming. This is just saying, do we want to move forward with these? And then if so, there will be another chance to, there will be the actual opportunity to look at the text amendments that will be coming forward. So with that, any questions on 1 through 4? I'm kind of looking to my Hollywood squares here. Any Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yeah, on the special events, can we consider keeping having frequency limitations that might be specific to the kind of use involved? I'm thinking, on the one hand, we want to give folks more flexibility, and that's a good thing. On the other hand, what we don't want to do is create a situation where six businesses, effectively share a parking lot, and one business decides that they're going to have a special event, essentially every week, and they take over the space in a way that keeps their neighbors from having a fair shot at also doing that space, using that space. So I don't know if there's a way to think about who else shares this space or is affected by it, as opposed to just spaces that are what a business does in their own parking lot with that's just theirs, go for it.
That's potentially something we can consider. That might be a little bit challenging. We'll take that down as a something to consider, if the type of business. But it'd be certainly easier to have a uniform standard. Right now, our standard is 4 times a year. But there are properties where it might be more suitable to have them more often if it doesn't impact the other businesses. I think that's what you're
Yeah, and you're is this for. Something that then is separate from the kind of usages that we're allowing for parklets and outdoor dining? Or is this only...
They're kind of the same. They're related. So there's two different things. There might be, hey, someone's got an existing business and they just happen to have a lot of property around them. They have a nice big parking lot, or they have a big extra sidewalk out front and they're just doing pop-ups all the time. Or it could be that, hey, it's something like Colony Square where they don't have a business at that location and they're going to come and they're going to set up on this vacant site temporarily and set that up, and they're going to bring in portable restrooms and a tent and a big sign and, skylight, and they're going to do something else. So there's two different spectrums of what this is, and I think what we're trying to do here is really say, when should the city approval process be involved? Which one of those? And we don't really want to be involved if someone's using their own property and are not interfering with the public right-of-way and are not interfering with accessibility, and they still have their parking available, and they don't set up any structures that fire needs to be concerned about, then let them do their business. But it's more of the bigger thing that does alter a site or does take on a site that's not part of their own current business, where I think we need to say, all right, that's still a special event that the city needs to be concerned about.
Okay. And then as a strategy, is there a way to use this kind of greater flexibility in allowing special events to help activate some of our spaces that are constrained right now? I'm thinking of the Kmart parking lot, for instance, where Mr. Oslin mentioned that wonderful ice cream shop, and other businesses that will do much better there when there's an anchor tenant in there. And right now, can we? That's an issue in that space in Colony Square. You can think of those.
Sure, and that's exactly what this kind of concept is designed for. Somebody wants to come to the Kmart parking lot and they want to do, a temporary fair of some sort.
Sure, or if you wanted to set up a month-long ice skating rink for the or something, you know, winter or something.
Yeah. Well, or roller skating.
A roller skating rink would, in the summertime would probably be better, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other council questions? I'm kind of looking to the, you know, I'll go left and right. I guess that's no? Okay, none. I wanted to make sure on number one, the fuel stations. I can't think of any fuel stations that have towing attached to them, but I just want to make sure that we're not taking away some sort of a benefit or entitlement that a current service station has that, and is using, that suddenly presents a problem to them.
Not that we're aware of. We know of one pre-existing towing business right now in town, and there's one more that's just about to come in the traffic way that we recently permitted, and not familiar with any that still exist with the fuel stations that we're aware of.
Okay. Would we, if this comes back, would we be noticing those kinds of businesses so they would know that this is changing?
We'd do a huge notification, and we'd notify the businesses that would be potentially affected. And it's still, folks with a fuel station could still apply for a towing business. It wouldn't prohibit them unless they're in a commercial retail zone or a commercial tourist zone, which is those areas where we want to focus our retail and our hotel and motel interests. But instead, we'd say, hey, if you're in a service-related retail zone, that's perfectly all right, which is those zones exist, for example, on the south end of El Camino Real, mm-hmm. and not quite at our commercial nodes, our intersections, things like that.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move on to 5, 6, 7, and 9.
This one was brought to our attention, as I mentioned, when we had a care facility that wanted to locate on a multifamily site, and their site is less than that 20,000 square feet, and they've been desperately trying to get this additional housing in there so they can handle this transitional housing that they're currently serving. And this essentially was prompted by us looking at that current code and wondering why we had that minimum site area set so high, and so this proposal would bring it down to 10,000 square feet, which is about a quarter acre lot for someone that would want to operate a care facility. This is a great example of why this is being proposed. These devices that are out in the street, such as the big plumbing devices, they call them the backflow devices. A lot of times they're covered with a sleeping bag. It looks a little bit better. But there's also other things that are similar to this. Might be a big air conditioning unit, might be other big plumbing devices. Really putting some standards in the code that these get located either inside buildings, which they can actually be put in the wall of a building, they can be put on the side of a building, they can be put behind landscape, they can be put in a structure. A lot of options. Not a huge cost enhancer. And we still want to provide options if they wanted to come in with some review. If they couldn't put it anywhere else, that's an option. Fencing, it's amazing our code doesn't have any standards on where barbed wire cannot be used, where razor wire can't be used, where concertina wire can't be used.
Did you just skip over 6? Like, we talked 5, and then I felt like you went through 6.
No, this is 6.
Okay, what was 5? Oh, okay, sorry. I think you were 5. Yes, you're
6,
right. I can count 5, 6,
7.
Now 7.
But I'm going to skip 8 and go straight
you,
to 9. How about
yes.
that?
Okay, that's where I was thinking.
Sorry.
You're all good.
So back to the wire. Most of our projects that trigger this go to DRC or Planning Commission, and we are able to put a condition on there about the type of fencing. Now, there are cases where people need security fencing. They have a business located by an industrial zone or somewhere where they need to protect a very substantial inventory. What we're speaking to here is not only commercial zones, but residential zones. If someone wanted to put up a, and we're not talking about animal fencing, such as 3-wire barbed wire that keeps in cattle or goats or sheep. We're talking about 6 or 7 foot fencing with barbed wire or concertina wire topper on it, which is sort of the real penitentiary-looking, aesthetically unfortunate-looking kind of fencing. We just don't have a code that speaks to it. That's the issue there. But not applying to this. This is a task arrow, and that's fine. The minimum lot size. We have a code right now that limits accessory structures to 50% of the size of the primary residence. If they exceed that size, but they meet all the criteria, they have a reduced review. Just an administrative use permit, that's a director's level review. But if they can't meet any all of those criteria, they have to go to the Planning Commission. One of those criteria that most people can't meet is most people don't have a conforming lot, because our lot size on the west side starts at 2.5 acres. We have a ton of lots that are 2 acres, 2.2 acres, 2.3 acres, 2.4 acres, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And those lots are all perfectly suitable for a larger accessory structure. Even an acre is a big site, you know, perfectly suitable for an accessory structure. And so the staff, based on what we're seeing over the last couple of years, we feel we've set that lot size too large, want to make some more flexibility to bring that down to 1.5, 1 acre. Open to your feedback on that one. I think we're going to do 8 next. Yeah, we're going to come back to 8. So we're going to stop there and ask questions or answer questions.
Perfect. Any questions for staff on Councilmember Borbo?
Yeah, just real quickly on this particular slide, you say here at the bottom, such as 1.5 or 1 acre. In the report, you kind of specify 1 acre. Are there any, what might be the, any potential drawbacks to lowering the size, if any? Because I'm thinking then we just go with the 1 acre.
You're just opening that envelope wider. So you're making it more and more flexible. We're totally open to the council's feedback or public feedback on that topic. I don't think there's a huge negative implication.
I mean, because I think any impact would potentially be on neighbors, right?
Correct.
So, and 1 acre is still a pretty good size lot. So, okay, thank you for the clarification.
Mayor Pro Tem Fung?
Yeah, and on the accessory structures, minimum lot size, that wouldn't take out the administrative review. There'd still be some sort of permission involved.
Absolutely, and it's an appealable action as well.
Okay.
If neighbors
okay.
were concerned.
So if somebody did use that process to do something that was egregiously out of the spirit of what we're trying to do here, you'd have a chance to address that with the administrative use permit, and it could be appealed.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, a lot, an acre seems fine to me.
All right. I think that finishes up our questions. So, let's go on to.
Let's take a step back to number 8.
Yes.
All right. Sorry to confuse you with the numbering. Here we are.
4 of a kind. Aces. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yes. 4 aces. Here we go. Card rooms, I kind of gave you a brief overview of this earlier. Many of the requirements created in the past are now duplicative due to the state gambling license requirements. So the state already requires these folks to do quite a bit to come in to us. We have to prove that they've got all their state licensing met. And then they come in, apply for their business license, and we have a series of things in our code which are very thorough, really good. We have a lot of police review of all of the employees. That's all really good. We're not saying that we should lighten up and change that. I think primarily what we're saying are these following things. Allow the applicants to simply submit a $500 check in lieu of a bond. Bonds are time-consuming for us to set up. That amount's too small. Allow the applicants to submit a state-issued gambling license from the California Gambling Control Commission instead of a city-issued work permit. That's duplicative. Allow for a ministerial business license approval by staff once all of the above steps are complete, rather than going back to city council. Because like I've said, there's already a discretionary review process for a card room. They already have to go to planning commission, and that could be appealed to city council. And then removing the requirement for city-issued work permits for all cardroom employees, instead the entire business. And then there was a couple other minor things to remove the redundant work in there. It's very rare that we go through this process, but we did it recently, and it took us several months to figure out how to get through this and how to get the details done. Lorelei and I worked together on that with finance to make that happen. And it was a learning experience. And after doing that, it's very infrequent, but we realized that the code hadn't been touched in many years. And not that we'll be dealing with this much, because like I said, we've already got all our tables used up in the city, but that's the idea there. This one's really just a clarification. We really rewrote this whole ordinance recently about these additions. And essentially, this code was originally written so that we didn't have someone build an accessory dwelling unit as part of their house and do a strange addition. But because of the way the definition was worded, there was confusion about whether we're talking about habitable space or uninhabited space, like a garage. We're talking about both. We're talking about all of it. And so it says that in the code, but I think some people get a little confused by it. The amendment would just really clarify that all additions need to meet the requirements if it's an addition, unless it's detached. And what we found is some people were coming in and saying, well, I have this long stick, you see, that's attached to my house that goes out there to that structure, so therefore it's attached. And by being attached, they would find a loophole out of the oversized accessory structure rule that requires that use permit. But yet it was just something attaching that house. So that's another reason this definition was created, is if it's truly going to be attached, truly attach it to your house, and then it's a logical addition, whether it's a garage, a barn, a workshop, an ADU. If it's attached, it's attached. If it's not, then it's going to fall into those size regulations about being an oversized accessory structure. Kind of an important detail to pick up. This is really reacting to state law. The state law has required that we... Oh, my computer's starting to go. You got an electrical plug-in over there by chance I can borrow? Things are starting to dim out on me. Sorry. Thank you, Jerry. So this one, we don't have a lot of option. The state says we can't require discretionary approval anymore on these things. Can't get a use permit or a business license. And it was part of the state really wanting to streamline childcare, which makes total sense. So it's a bit of a have to. Thanks. I can't get it plugged in for some reason. We'll get that going. I still have another 5 minutes of power. We'll be fine.
Is that a hint to us?
Yeah, right. That's right.
Sorry. Technical difficulties. We'll be back up and running in no time. I'm just going to keep talking. I'll let Luke do his job. Thank you, Luke. Oh. All right. That was number 11. Oh, now it's not letting me move slides anymore.
Well, I do know that 12 comes after 11.
It does.
I got it.
Oh, there it goes. Right. Look at that. Setback clarifications. So the zoning code right now allows for enclosed structures to project into the side yard. And when we say side and rear set yard, there's a space. Our zoning code basically says you've got to have a 10-foot space in the back of your yard where you have no structures. And it requires a 5-foot space on the side of your yard where there's no structures. It's done for a number of reasons. It's done for aesthetics. It's done for fire code. It's done to have us, you know, people not having overlook in each other's property. There's a little bit of inconsistency where one section of our zoning allows a structure that's less than 12 feet tall to be as close as 3 feet on the back or the side of your property, while another section requires a 5-foot minimum. So we found this discrepancy. This would make these two sections consistent with each other and still allow this setback as small as 5 feet when an accessory structure is less than 400 square feet and 12 feet tall or lower in height. And actually, some of the new state law for accessory dwelling units echoes that same kind of requirement anyway. Eating and drinking places, parking requirements. Mariah, you want to weigh in on this one? Are you there somewhere? Are you in the background? Let's see if she can come online. I'm putting her on the spot right now. If not, I can speak up. It's a test.
Okay. Can you hear me? Am I here?
I can hear you. Yes. All right. She's there. Sorry to put you on the spot. Eating and drinking places, parking requirements. Do you want to describe this one, Mariah?
Yeah, this is probably one of the most simple ones. This is just a little typo in our code. Basically, when you're looking at the parking requirements for eating and drinking places in the new city, which people who are opening businesses or doing tenant improvements often are, our code currently says you need one table per patron, which really doesn't make a lot of sense. So we're trying to clarify to basically, it's in the parking section, so we don't necessarily need to say one parking space. But if we say one per table, it will just clarify this little typo.
Perfect. Thank you.
That's it.
I knew I'd get you to present to City Council tonight. All right. Number 14, this is the last one. This is just a clarification, really. Driveway surfacing requirement on slopes 12% or greater, which is a pretty good slope for a driveway. Our zoning code right now says asphalt, concrete, or chip seal. The city's adopted fire standards don't allow for that to be used as an alternative, so this will just bring it us into consistency with fire code to not use chip seal on driveways that are over 12%. So that we have a safer driveway. So in conclusion, what we did find is that all these proposed amendments, conceptual amendments, are consistent with the general plan. We're seeking your direction tonight on which ones to move forward to the Planning Commission and then back to City Council, and also happy to hear if you'd like to have any changes or ideas or considerations on the topics that we presented to you, but we can also talk about the last few in further detail. Thank you.
Thank you. So if we look at 8 and then 10 through 14, just some of those cleanup things or consistency with California code, do we have any questions on these last items? Councilmember Darris.
Just a couple questions. On card rooms, it really, I mean, you kind of touched on it, but I don't think it's really necessary what you're dealing with. The number of card tables you said were maxed out at 6 tables. I'm just wondering where that came from, and can that ever be increased?
It can be. It's in the code now, and at our city council's pleasure, we could increase it. I don't believe the state regulates that. Our city regulates that. But I think that would be a bigger conversation, and I think our law enforcement folks and others would want to weigh in as to the complexities of that.
I was just wondering if it was a state-regulated thing that said you guys can only have 6 because of the size of the town or whatever it might be.
But I think we have that discretion.
Okay, cool. And on number 10, I had several lengthy discussions about this one with Mr. Hoslin. This is where I think it was triggered. And maybe because I read the code book a little more than the average person, I understood this. I thought I understood it perfectly clear. So thanks. I wanted you to bring this up. So the image that's on the right, to me, the way it states, residential additions are defined as an increase in floor area to the residential unit. Okay, if that, and then I'll get to the second sentence here in a second. That picture on the right, that building that's outlined in red, if that's just a garage, then that doesn't even, this verbiage here doesn't even apply to that because it's not an addition to the residence. To the residential unit.
Can I jump in there? I think the confusion is there's a paragraph there. There is one sentence that relates to habitable. The rest relates to habitable and uninhabitable. So we just want to clarify that even more. This one sentence is the only part that relates to habitable.
Okay.
Everything else is uninhabitable and habitable. That was the intent of that section.
Okay.
But because that sentence says habitable, that is a very common confusion. So we just want to
whatever you can do to make it clear, I think that's great, because that's not a habitable addition. If that is a garage, I mean, if that's they're adding a couple of bedrooms and trying to connect it with a little hallway like that, I can see that's not acceptable.
And in most cases, it doesn't really even matter either. If someone wants to detach their garage from their house or just have a few sticks that attach it, that's totally fine. It's only when it creates a code problem where they're trying to do an oversized structure and then call it attached or
okay.
It's really not.
All right. Anyway, I'm glad that you're addressing this because I know there was just a lot of confusion over it, and hopefully what you come up with will be much easier to understand. Thank you.
Councilmember Borbo.
Thank you. I have two questions. One under number 11, the daycare thing, just confused, four separate categories. Wonder what happened to 12 to 15 on the number of children. I mean, you got 15 or more, then you have 7 to 12. Where do you fall if you're got, 13
can't,
or 14?
Can't do it. Just can't have a daycare. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I can't have one of those.
State,
yeah.
Sorry, Phil, can I chime in a little bit?
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Mariah here. So there might be a typo in there. It should be a large family daycare, I believe, is actually defined by the state as up to 14 children.
Up to.
If you're over, I think you're, a small school or something. But basically, the state is just requiring that these municipalities treat large family daycares the same as we've treated small family daycares. So it would be up to, at least 14.
Right. 7 to 14 answers the question.
Thank awesome.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Next question, number 12, setback clarifications. Seems like the most appropriate place to bring up a question I've had. A while back, we on council received an email from an individual wanting to put in solar panels, I guess, and their plans were rejected because they didn't have a big enough setback in the front yard, or what was considered the front yard. And we are at Atascadero are pretty unique in the sense that we have a lot of oddly shaped yards on oddly, on all kinds of slopes and terrain and whatever. And I drove by the property and I thought to myself, well, I don't know where they want to do it because I don't know what the hell their front yard is or their side yard or their backyard. And it just struck me that we have plenty of, so our plan checkers were following our code, being said, hey, you got to have 15 feet of setback here. But it seems to me that we have a lot of oddball shaped lots, and I would rather give you, as the Director of Community Development, some discretion on determining what is a front yard in a particular unusual case. And would this be an appropriate place, or wherever it is that we define front yards, side yards, backyards, et cetera, and the requisite setbacks, that somebody could come to you and go, hey, I understand what the code says, but my lot is weird, it's unusual, I want to count this as my side yard instead of my front yard, and give you, the Director of Community Development, some discretion to say, yeah, that makes sense in this particular instance. Is that something that you could do, and would this be the appropriate place to do it?
We already actually have that discretion, and we recently refined all the definitions for front and side and rear, setback and yard and double frontage and corner lot, and because we had to do all that for our accessory dwelling unit standards. So it's pretty good now. It's pretty flexible at the same time. We can make the call on it when it's an unusual lot, because we do have a lot of triangular lots on a curved road. Exactly. Where there might be a road that actually goes to both sides of the lot, the back and the front, and it's on a curve and it's a triangle. They're all over the place. You're exactly mm-hmm. right. We do have that discretion to make the call on what that front setback is, which is typically between the main entrance to the house and the street, but it's flexible. The thing about ground-mounted solar, it's a little more challenging because there's some fire codes that require access around that solar structure, and there's some building code things that make it a challenge, and we've got to have access around that structure different than when it's on the roof of a structure if it's a ground-mounted array. So.
Right, but I would understand that, but it would seem that those things would be more important than, whether it's in a considered on a weird-shaped lot.
And I think that's where we have that discretion already.
Okay, so you're saying you have it, and you may have had it in that case.
May have had it, and I So I'm not familiar with the one you're speaking of.
Just to update you, yeah, I know exactly which one you're talking about, and I believe it's going to the Design Review Committee this Thursday, I think. We do have an option. That one was determined to be within the front because it was a really curved lot, but it was right along the road. So in that case, they do have an option to apply for an exception through the Design Review Committee to go a little bit closer. So if you want to be within the front setback, there is that option. So this applicant did decide to do that. So Perfect. Just to follow up on that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and I didn't see any other questions. So I have one before we go out to public comment, and this is just overall the conclusion stated here, seeking direction from council as to which amendment should be prioritized and brought back, and alternatively, are there some that should be pushed back to a future zoning code update? I think what I would like to know from you, are there ones where you say, hey, these, you know, four are going to take a lot of time, and I don't see a lot of need for them in the immediate future, and I would like to push those off. You know, these three, I think it's critical that we get these done, and then, you know, the others, you know, we can kind of take your direction. So I'd be looking for some input from staff.
I think we've weeded this list down already and narrowed it down to things that we feel are all the things that we should be taking forward. Do you have any thoughts about that, Mariah, at all? If we had to prioritize on these, is there anything that is most important, or is something that needs, is there something here that needs a lot more time and effort?
No, I would say I agree with you. I mean, we started out with probably about 25 that we looked at, and we kind of weeded them out, whether they were too small or too big, and we wanted to take them more in a focused way. So I think that these ones are ones that we feel we can move forward with if the council does want us to.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. All right, what I'd like to do now is I'll go ahead and open up public comment. If there's any members of the public wishing to speak, those of you in the webinar, feel free to raise your hand if you would like to comment. Anyone on the phone, Luke? I'm not seeing anyone. Okay. All right, so we'll close public comment now and bring that back to council and to staff. You've kind of heard questions and a little bit of input from us. Are you needing any more clarity on some of these items based upon discussions that we've had already?
Let me think a moment as I look through this list. I think staff has clarity on all these items.
Okay.
I think maybe special events would be the only one where it's still a little bit cloudy. Maybe council's thoughts on that, but I think we heard most of it, unless you wanted to.
Okay. So I would ask any specifics with regards to special events. I'll kind of just go down the line here. I'm not seeing any. I know Mayor Pro Tem Funk, you had brought some things up. You already brought yours. Councilmember Newsom, anything in particular with regard to special events?
What's staff looking for? I mean, what are you struggling with? The pop-ups or the duration or
I think
the number?
What we're struggling with is what is the threshold of a special event that should require the city to offer a special event permit, which is it's not expensive. I think it's $200 or $300, but it requires that our police and fire department review the special event, and sometimes our building division review the special event. And I think what we have right now, what we're thinking about is if someone is erecting a structure that's subject to the building or fire code, or they're altering an existing parking or access zone, or they're going to use the public right-of-way, staff felt that that was the trigger for a special event permit. But if they're not doing any of those things, then
maybe we put a number of attendees, you know, at 25 or something that we think that considers a crowd or might.
That's another potential option, but you just don't, it's hard to judge how many would show up, I suppose, too, to certain things.
It seems like it would come back to what are the public safety concerns. So whether you're talking building code, you're talking fire, all of that. So you certainly would have more insight to that. I think when I start thinking of temporary, like whether it's, say, the lot or something like that, like you mentioned the, you know, the fairness issue, which, you know, there's California law right now that someone can pop up something just about anywhere. And, yeah, they need to get a business license, but it's ministerial. They just come in and get a business license. They can pop up anywhere. And so we get complaints about food vendors and that type of thing. And you need to be controlling this. Well, it's the health department through the county that needs to be doing that. But, of course, that's not happening at all these because someone's just going to pop up here or there. So it's very much a buyer beware. And many of us have seen a pop-up at the corner of Del Rio and El Camino that is, you know, feather flags galore and, you know, cloth chairs and jerseys and all sorts of things. So, which very much isn't, there isn't a fairness there when you consider a business with a brick and mortar who needs to go through all of the proper channels to make sure that it is safe and, you know, and meets all of the requirements. So it is a little bit challenging, yet you also don't want to penalize, say, you know, the businesses at the lot if there is no problem. We don't want to create a problem that they suddenly have to pay for. So I can see the struggle there. Yeah. I'm glad I could help.
Perhaps we table that for a little bit more research.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk, did you have more to
say? Yeah, I think we also think about the cumulative frequency of these events, you know, so that, you know, something that's going to be happening, you know, once a month or whatever is a different kind of critter than something, you know, or the one that we are, you know, that we see every week, as opposed to, you know, something that, you know, a seasonal event or, you know, this is, you know, spring fling type of thing, and that, you know, much, and it's also a little bit different if you're talking about an established bricks and mortar store that wants to do something special in some accessory space. Which we would want to be pretty liberal about, unless they're, you know, taking over the space permanently and, you know, or damaging public safety, versus somebody who doesn't otherwise have any kind of license and is just kind of taking over a right of way or space to see if they can sell some stuff.
That's what I wanted to know. Does this include garage sales?
No, they're separate. They're separately regulated. They're fine.
Right, no matter the size. Aside from that, I just, you know, yes, let's get rid of the concertina wire in those areas. We really don't want to have this stuff that looks like a prison.
So I think when it comes to the special events, you know, again, public safety, things that we would be concerned about with a brick and mortar doing something in their parking lot where we say you're, you know, have a structure and we need to make sure this is safe. And so then how does that apply to outdoor pop-up type things? And, you know, maybe it is, rather than four times a year, do we do like a once a month? So if we have our, you know, first Fridays, and so ideally we're doing something, you know, 12 times a year, you know, maybe that's a go, or we say six times a year. But I would, you know, do your best to come up with something that seems like it. There is that, I'm not going to say a fairness aspect because I don't think that's possible, nor should that be necessarily what we're shooting for. I think we need to be looking at how do we provide the best opportunity possible for businesses to flourish and to have these events while also, you know, keeping public safety in mind and not ending up with problems like we've had in the past with special events that are, or special uses that go on in perpetuity but are creating problems. Is that somewhat helpful?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, I will look for, it's not that there was specific wording for a motion, but I do know you want a motion on moving forward on all of these, so I will ask my colleagues for a motion.
I so move.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Newsom and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk to move forward on all 13 or all 14 amendments. Yes. All right. Roll call, please.
I would give staff discretion on if they want to accelerate some of these and leave some behind as you start working on it. I'm perfectly cool with that. I'd also, if I might, add one more comment. That's just generally, when we talked about the action planning and priorities and how much the staff has going on right now, which is really huge in your department, that the I suggested that we maybe not do a massive or a really systematic essentialism effort, but to find those moments where you can clean stuff up. And I want to applaud the department for finding those moments in this. You know, I hear that in what you brought forward. Oh, this process is, you know, it's causing a lot of extra work and redundancy, and it's not helpful. You know, so finding the low-hanging fruit and let's clean it up, and you know, and make both life easier for you and the customers. You know, and that's exactly what we want to see. So, if you need flexibility in what moves forward and what doesn't, I'm good with that.
We have a motion by Councilmember Newsom, second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Werbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. I will move on to council announcements and committee reports, and I'll start from my right to my left, Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. I spent a lovely 2.5 days with a CJPIA elected official summit. Very informative information, and allowed us to collaborate with other council members, city council members, mayors, to kind of understand how we can better be council members, how we can share our experiences and learn from one another. It was held in our wonderful town of Paso's Alegrada, so that was nice to have out-of-towners come and get to experience Atascadero as well while they were here, so learned a lot with that. Finance committee is meeting this Thursday. City schools meeting met last week. Was really productive. Getting ready, as they're getting ready to graduate, I want to congratulate all of those that are at scholarship tonight. Some of us couldn't be there to support you, but we support you in our hearts. So thank you. Have a good night.
Okay. DRC, as mentioned, is meeting on Thursday to discuss a solar array project. And then Homeless Services Oversight Council met last week, and we did have a lively discussion around the California State Association of Counties proposal, which aligns very well with our countywide strategic plan on homelessness. And at the conclusion of that, we passed a resolution in support of that that did specifically include language pertinent to the discussion the mayor and I had last time, that the plan specifically allows for flexibility in the defined set of roles for counties and cities where otherwise determined, consistent with the SLO County plan to address homelessness. So.
Yes, in reference to the Finance Committee meeting that Councilmember Newsom mentioned, that is the last of six meetings where we reviewed the budget as developed by staff. So, and of course, then the budget will come forward to the full council in June. And IWMA is coming up the following week. And that's it. Thank you.
Let's see, CapSlow met last week, mostly just standard business stuff that we took care of there. But the week before we met, there was a ribbon cutting at 40 Prado for their solar panel system and battery system. Really quite impressive with what they were able to do, and nice to see the private donations that came in to make that happen. It was really impressive to see that. This week, I think I'm going to be getting introduced to Visit SLOCAL Advisory Committee, so this will be my first meeting. I believe I have something on Zoom, and then the following week in person with the group, so I'll be getting my feet wet with that one. The Air Pollution Control District was supposed to meet last week, but there was a mix-up somehow with the way the agenda was announced or posted, so that has been pushed now to June 1st. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. I had a countywide mayor's meeting last week in Paso Robles. A few things to note. The mayor from Grover Beach, Mayor Bright, talked about their new camping ordinance in Grover Beach, and she said it has had a night and day effect. It's been a very, very significant. So it was encouraging to hear that, and I know that our city manager will be connecting with Grover Beach just to see how that's working there, and I know that's something that we've we've considered updating our camping ordinance, and so it'll be just really interested to see how that's working there and how that would apply here. On Vineyard, probably many of you are aware that on the Vineyard overpass over the years, you've had several folks that have been up there with political signs, but recently we've had two occasions where individuals have been up there with what I think we would all consider abhorrent signs promoting ideologies that are disgusting to all of us. And what I've discovered, I had heard rumors of this, but Supervisor Pashong did confirm that these individuals are not from our county. They are not from our community. They are coming from outside for whatever reason to stir up whatever kind of controversy or fights or whatever it is. So far there has been nothing. It has been more a free speech issue. You have had counter protests out there, but it's unfortunate to see that. But I do want people to know that when you see those signs, they are not people from our community, from our county. They are from outside. Dave Mullinax spoke from the League of California Cities. So the CBRT measure, California Business Roundtable, that is moving forward, that is basically the proposition that will be on the ballot in 2024 that would put at risk any, tax or fee increases at the local level. So what the League is going to be doing is some polling, I think, really to figure out what is the messaging. And they'll be kicking off something this fall and letting us know what that is, how we need to be informing people about the ramifications. Dave said that of the approximately 200 ballot measures that were passed locally in 2022 in the state of California, about 180 of them could be at risk. So that's pretty significant. Of course, that would affect Atascadero with F-14 and how we would be moving forward with that. What I did just find out is sewer, water, and trash, so like the 218 votes for things like we did tonight with sewer, those are now exempt, so that is a piece of good news in that. I asked how long, when might the legislature be making some sort of a deal with the CBRT, and Dave said they have until June of next year. So that's a ways to wait. And then we had a nice presentation on Spaceport, which was fun to see. Paul Sloan, of course, was there, and their director of the airport. One of the focuses that they really have is in the university setting, because apparently there are 50-plus universities that have been hearing from all over the country, and of course they're working closely with Cal Poly. But a lot of these students who will be in school, and they'll have a project that, they need to, get a CubeSat up into space, and it could take a few years, and by that time, the students graduated, and the project's no longer valid. So it seems like there's a really good opportunity here, and excited to see them continuing to move that forward. Let's see. Also, last week had a meeting. So SLOCOG, working on the housing and infrastructure plan, contracted with REACH to do a lot of outreach and have a steering committee. So there's a steering committee of public officials, so myself, Andy Pease from San Luis Obispo, we have the Grover Beach City Manager, we have people from Wallace Group, Cal Poly, just kind of throughout the county, and of course SLOCOG and REACH individuals there. So we had a meeting last week, and really they're looking at potential policies that could be used region-wide, and again, none of this is going to be forced on, on cities or on the county, but more of, here are the types of policies, here are the opportunities, here's how they've been implemented other places, and things where we can take and say, okay, how might that apply to Atascadero? Also looking at, of course, affordable by design study, identify common physical characteristics for affordable by design housing. Of course, we all want to think affordable by design is the answer, but, for that low and very low, we already know that it really isn't going to be. One of the things that I've been concerned about and make sure that I make known is a lot of times when they talk, that jobs housing balance, they're looking at getting more housing where there are jobs, and I keep making it known that, okay, there are some of us that have a lot of housing, and we need to look at locating the jobs here. So I'm making sure that continues to be at least part of the discussion. So We will be moving into, we're right now in phase three of setting priorities, and they'll be moving to the next phase, phase four of community support in the very near future. So that is it for our council announcements and committee reports. I have I have an individual determination, and that is on the design review committee. I want to thank Councilmember Newsom for her years of service on design review committee, including being chair, and to welcome and thank Councilmember Darris for stepping on to design review committee, and for Mayor Pro Tem Funk agreeing to chair the committee now. So thank you all for your service. And any other individual determinations? All right, seeing none, we will adjourn our meeting. Good night, all.